Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Everybody, welcome to Reporting is Eligible. I'm Paul Noonan, and this is, of course, the postseason show, I suppose. Post-playoff loss. the Packers dropped a heartbreaker to the 49ers. It was an asinine loss, as they always have in the playoffs. The only positive was I got to meet Matt at halftime, so there's that. But it was bad. It was bad in, I don't know, 12 different ways I think I counted so far. And to help me break down the dozen or so ways that the Packers probably should have won the game, first in Urban Wauwatosa, as per usual.
Hey, it's J.R. Radcliffe, trending sports reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. I did something like that with the Seattle game a few years ago, where I found 15 things, and they were like, they were not small things. They were not like minutiae. It was, if this play goes differently, I think the Packers win the game. A couple of them are a little weird, like if they win the coin flip in overtime or something. But I don't know if this is quite that level of man, if just one thing goes right. But damn, that was a tough one. JSOnline.com, I did a power ranking misery index.
You sure did.
The Packers playoff losses. This one's six, I think. has a case to go higher, depending on what comes next. What comes next informs this loss quite a bit in my mind. But that was a tough hang. That was a tough hang.
Six is, I mean, just a testament to how crushing Packer playoff losses have been. It's kind of incredible because that was a real kick in the nuts. Matt, why don't you bring it on in?
I'm in the business of misery. Let's take it from the top. She's got a body like an
hourglass. What's happening here? I wasn't expecting this.
My name is Matt, but you can call me Matub. Acme Packing Company meme weaver and general Twitter rabble rouser. My voice is this way because I was yelling and getting loud at Lambeau the way you are supposed to.
So we get the deep voice Matub for the second time in 3 weeks. I am here for it.
But this one is au naturel.
I have a great business idea, by the way, for games like this that the Packers should definitely do. One of the problems with games like this is it's hard to clap loud with gloves. Most gloves do not make loud noises when you clap loud, but I had these awesome like chopper mittens and they were loud as hell. And the Packers should do a giveaway in cold playoff games of loud gloves for clapping. You know, we've had boomsticks. It's not like you can't do it. You're not allowed to. They should absolutely make that happen. It would make the experience a lot better. Annoying, but better.
Or roll with me for a second.
Yeah.
Green and yellow vuvuzelas.
I'm gonna not roll with you there.
No,
or build a fucking dome.
No.
Shut up.
It wasn't even bad. Like Matt, were you cold? I was not cold during the game.
No, I was not. I was not cold. So the trick was, I wore my wind cutting thin jacket as a base layer. And that was it. Like you cut out the wind, you're good.
Yeah,
I had a gator built into my shirt.
Yeah, I layered and it was fine. I didn't even have to use chemical heaters. I brought 40 of them, anticipating I would, and it just wasn't that bad. And there was not that much wind. I know it maybe looked like it because of the little tiny snowflakes in the second half, but it was pretty still. Like offense should not have struggled as much as it did for both teams because of the weather. That's not what happened.
Yeah, it was not swirly. It was not windy.
Yep.
It was just cold.
Indeed.
I don't actually believe the dome take, by the way, but Mina Kimes was answering the what's the one sports take that you think is crazy but kind of believe, like to get the most out of Josh Allen, they should build a dome in Buffalo. And like, I've thought about that a lot. Like, of course, especially after seeing Josh Allen and the Chiefs go at it, Build a dome and so, get, you know, Aaron Rodgers level production for the next 15 years out of that quarterback.
Lambeau has definitely cost them playoff games for sure. The Giants games, I think they win in a dome. So I think it's a legit take.
Shit, they win this. They win this game in a dome.
Yeah, do they? You know what, they do win this game in a dome. You're right, because Mason can kick further. And
so can Corey.
Yep.
And Aaron Rodgers maybe puts enough on it to hit Devontae in stride.
Yeah, yeah.
And or Aaron Jones.
Aaron Jones in stride. Good call. Right. All right, so fine.
I just assume Aaron Rodgers is much better in a dome, like all the way across the board.
So a little while ago in Acme Packing Company, while bored, we look up like stats because we're weird.
I do that all the time. So
we were talking about how Aaron Rodgers seems to own Jerry World. This was around the time that they announced that the Super Bowl might be at AT&T Stadium.
Yep.
And we looked it up, and it turns out that Aaron Rodgers in September is better than Aaron Rodgers at Jerry World.
Yeah. So also true.
There you go.
All right. I just hate losses like this. Because,
where do we start?
Yeah, I know. It's such a crappy thing to see them play so badly on offense and then see Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen the next day, like, just effortlessly score a million touchdowns too. Just, yeah, annoying.
But that was arguably one of the best playoff games.
It was great.
Time.
It was fantastic. I would have rather gone to that game 1,000 times over. anyway, I've got this structure to sort of a list of things that I think made a material difference in them winning or losing. And I think the first one we can start with pregame, which was I'm sitting around the stadium and I'm looking at Twitter and I see Rob Domofsky tweet that Billy Turner starting at left tackle and Dennis Kelly starting at right tackle. And I out loud say, what the hell? what is going on there? So it's pretty clear they expected David Bakhtiari to play and he didn't. And instead of just plugging in Yosh Nijman, like they've done all season, they do this sort of gymnastics where they move Billy Turner to left tackle, even though he doesn't play left tackle very much, and they go with Dennis Kelly at right tackle. And I think it unquestionably cost them the game to do that, because Dennis Kelly was an absolute disaster at right tackle. It was awful. It was terrible. And I still don't know why they did it, and I don't know if anybody's asked them about it yet. So, I don't know. Bad. We've subsequently learned Aaron Nagler had an interview with David Bakhtiari today about his knee. Got an exclusive with him, and he's apparently got fluid on it. But it doesn't explain why they thought he was going to play right up until game time. So, it was awful. And I think if Bakhtiari plays or Yosh Nijman plays, they probably win the game. I don't know. Any disagreements?
I do not disagree.
Okay.
So, I have a couple thoughts here. So Dennis Kelly on the first drive, I thought was actually pretty good. His seal is what helps AJ Dillon score that touchdown when they were seemingly unstoppable coming down the field. But it deteriorated after that. It wasn't just Dennis Kelly. It was across the board. I think that what sticks out to me is Billy Turner coming off an injury. You know, you forget he's missed a bunch of games. You're going to throw him in at left tackle,
right?
Where we all know, right. We all know he's better at right tackle. Like, we all know that. That's not a secret. I feel like maybe they went with experience over raw talent because Yosh Nijman has obviously never been in that spot. That might be what they
I think what it actually was Matt LaFleur was in quiz mode and his brain turned into tapioca and couldn't remember that BJ Raji got an interception in the NFC Championship game, except he put Billy Turner at left tackle.
It doesn't even seem like you're going against chemistry in addition to talent here. Like, Billy Turner is better than Yosh Nijman is, but you know, you're asking a bunch of guys to play in uncomfortable spots. Like, yes, Dennis totally. Kelly plays. And Dennis Kelly, by the way, is a better run blocker than pass blocker. And he was fine when they were running on their first two drives, and A.J. Dillon was still healthy, foreshadowing. Once they had to go to the pass a little bit more, he made Nick Bosa. I mean, Nick Bosa can make himself a factor, but that was a huge mismatch that they exploited over and over again. You know, if you're going to go with Dennis Kelly out there, you got to help him more, which he just didn't do nearly enough of. I mean, when Yosh plays, he gets a lot of help. Dennis Kelly did not get a lot of help, and I don't know why they were so slow to react to the fact that Aaron was just getting killed back there. It just bizarre on coaching level, on a personnel level, on every single level, and a bad way to start things off.
And the tragedy of it is this injury that David Bakhtiari suffered now essentially cost you two playoff games. I think we agree that he would have been the difference in the Buccaneers game last year.
Yep.
And he was unable to get on the field for meaningful football this year. Not only that, you have to wonder, was it the wrong thing to play him against Detroit? We'll never know that. Maybe it's moot. Maybe it happens this way either way. But did he, you know, did that cause discomfort that made it impossible for him to suit up for this game?
In the interview with Nagler, he mentions the Detroit game. He says he did well. And then the Thursday, a few days later, they took like 90 cc's of fluid out of his knee, which is just an insane amount of he said that Brian Bulaga had 30 cc's of fluid removed from his knee at one point. So
that's
it's a lot.
A lot of fluid. I mean, in Mario Kart, you have 50 cc engines. So, I mean, that's twice that.
And then you have to wonder, does that porousness lead to, because ultimately this game, I think you'd agree, we could talk about special teams too, but it's lost because Aaron Rodgers wasn't good enough to single-handedly win a game, as he has done millions of times over, in a game that was only 13-10. Is Aaron Rodgers' jumpiness, is his inability to do his job as well, because he had to be concerned about what was coming around tackle?
I think the Mercedes fumble broke his brain.
Yeah, which
pretty I don't see that as the flashpoint everybody else.
He was nails until the Mercedes fumble.
This brings us to number two, which is the Mercedes the fumble streak, I think we should call it, because there's the Mercedes fumble.
That was three plays in a row.
Yes, which the Mercedes fumble was a fumble. I think we all agree it was a fumble. There was not a lot of ambiguity there. On the next play, Deebo Samuel fumbled on a carry, but was ruled to have his forward progress stopped. And that's a judgment call. I don't blame the officials too much for that. It was definitely a scrum situation and whistles get blown. But on the very next play after that, we had a Brandon Ayuk reception and fumble that was very similar to the Mercedes Lewis reception and fumble.
He took more steps than Mercedes
He
did.
Certainly made a football move. I was also very upset. So Matt and I were in the stadium. I've watched it since then. I still think it was a fumble. And more than that, it was ruled a fumble on the field. And they overturned it, which is additionally ridiculous. I mean, there was certainly not enough video evidence to conclusively overturn the play. So that was ridiculous. But I actually do kind of agree with Matt. I do think but prior to Mercedes' fumble, they had not had a third down. The Packers had moved effortlessly down the field and not even taken to third down to convert a first down. And when this happened, I don't know if it was just coincidence that the script ended when this play happened or what, but their offense became much less dynamic, much more predictable, and just a series of throwing into the teeth of a cover two shell over and over again. So don't know what caused it, but it definitely caused it. And if the Mercedes fumble doesn't happen, and there was, I mean, it's a fumble, that's fine. They, I think, obviously win the game. If the Ayuk fumble is not overturned, that's the difference of the Packers having it at the San Francisco 39, which is where Chris Barnes returned it to, versus the Packers 16 after the punt that the 49ers did. That is a huge difference, probably at least a field goal, and also probably the difference in the game. So I also think that one is huge. It's annoying.
The reason I don't point to that quite as much is just, and this is not novel or anything, just where they were in the game. We're super early. Yes, they've had one amazing drive. They moved the ball and they fumbled it. But there's no reason to think that the next drive is going to be the start of this long-tenured terribleness where they can't get into gear on offense. So they had a lot of time to adjust. They had a lot of time to figure out what wasn't working. And the 49ers are the ones who got better. I think they were going to get better at no matter what happened, no matter how the Mercedes or the various fumbles that came thereafter shook out. Now, you can argue, certainly with the Barnes thing, that they would have been in position to score points that would have been crucial, but I don't know, maybe it was always destined that they were going to get stuck in neutral, and maybe they don't even score from the 40. I don't know, but they had a lot of time to figure that out. I just cannot point to a first quarter whoopsie as the reason that they lost the game. If we're close to halftime, absolutely, but if it's just they had so much time.
Well, speaking of close to halftime, Paul and I are standing in the atrium having a beer and we're like, well, so the missed field goal is pretty freaking big, right?
Yes, that one was obviously huge. Skip around a little bit, but special teams reared its ugly head throughout the game, and obviously the Mason missed field goal is huge. I mean, there's no when you miss a field goal at the end of the half, there's no knock-on effects. You know, you either get 3 points or you don't. There's no kickoff afterwards, no field position swing or anything, and that's just 3 points that the Packers didn't have for no good reason. And in our consistent, like, what is Maurice Drayton doing wrong? This is a Maurice Drayton doing something wrong, I think. I mean, you can blame Tyler Lancaster for not executing, but...
Yeah, Tyler Lancaster hasn't executed all year.
Yeah, and you got to fix this. And this is...
Stands there.
This is one of the most basic precepts of field goal and punt blocking, which is if you're on the end and there's two guys coming at you, you block the inside guy. You let the outside guy go. He has further to go to block the kick. Tyler Lancaster blocked nobody. He just ran between the two guys coming at him, and the inside rusher got the kick. That's what happens. That's why you do that, and you just can't do that. That is a failure of execution and coaching, doing the wrong thing again on special teams. 3 points gone for no good reason. Awful.
And like many have noted, it's Jimmy Ward. There's, you know, a starting member of the secondary.
Yep.
Who makes the block. It's Debo Samuel, who's running the ball to the 50-yard line on a kickoff return on a drive that ends in 3 points. Like, I don't think that necessarily introducing more starters, we talked about this, like, there's only so many guys you could put on that unit. They had put a couple, Rasul Douglas among them. I don't know if it solves their issues or whatever, but the 49ers were not leaving a lot to chance by having two of their more important players playing key roles on special teams.
Yeah, and the Packers tried to emulate by putting A.J. Dillon on special teams, who, while covering a kickoff, had Oren Burks land on him with his knee and break his ribs. And A.J. Dillon was lost for the game at that point after having a pretty good start to the game. And not that Aaron Jones is bad, but A.J. Dillon was dragging people into the end zone from 6 yards out, and that was a skill set that they could have used later. So, again, blew up in their face. Maybe a good idea, but did not work out. And, you know, if you have better special teams, maybe you don't have to have A.J. Dillon on kickoff coverage. So, that too.
A true damned if you do, damned if you don't situation. Mm-hmm. But, and moreover, the field goal attempt, I mean, it should have been 7 points. And you can blame, I don't know, Aaron Jones weirdly cutting inside on a guy.
Absolutely blame Aaron.
It's Aaron Jones' fault.
I guess you could blame the throw, but yeah, that was Aaron Jones.
The throw could have been a little bit better. But if Aaron Jones is a wide receiver there, I think he catches it in stride without turning weirdly and just bolts into the end zone. But aside from that, Aaron Jones did not have to try and deke out Jaquiski Tartt. Time's running down. You got to make the end zone or get out of bounds. You don't cut it back inside. And that's the absolute one thing you can't do, is run yourself into a tackle back on the field. So he did that. They should have at least had a much closer field goal try. They should have had more time on the clock by virtue of him getting out of bounds. And yeah, it probably cost him it cost him 7 because they missed a field goal. but a good chance at 7. And I don't know what Aaron Jones was thinking. He can out-sprint guys. He's very fast. Just a bizarre choice there for no good reason at all. Hated it live. Knew it would cost him, too.
Matt LaFleur is taking the blame for a lot of this, for everything, from special teams, which, whatever, Maurice Drayton's not coming back. I think we all know that. But he's taking the blame on everything. And obviously, you're the head coach. Of course, you're going to get some of it. How much, though? How much do you think that's fair? How much is he just covering for other issues, for his players, for his other coaches? How much falls on Matt LaFleur in your mind?
I think kind of a lot. When I rewatched the game, by the way, I rewatched the game, which I just want to mention because I deserve some credit for it, maybe like plenary credit. I expected to see a lot more of other receivers other than Adams running open, because there were some high profile examples of that. There's that the last shot he takes to Adams where Lazard is cutting over the middle and open on that same play. Equanimeous St. Brown is wide open deep. There was another Lazard open where they were trying to pick on Josh Norman. And those all got highlighted immediately. But if you go and watch the game again, after the first two series, they just have a bunch of bizarre passing play calls where the 49ers are playing just sort of this cover two shell, trying to get the Packers to throw underneath. And the receivers are just running into it. They're running into it, not breaking the correct way. If you go read Justice's tweet thread on it, but the 49ers are like keeping safeties in the center of the field, and the Packers are running receivers basically right at them and having them cut toward them so they don't create any space. And it just seemingly makes no sense. It looked like a McCarthy plan where you're sending guys just out on out and stick and comeback patterns with over and over again with no motion or creativity or play action or anything like that, not trying to take the top off, not trying to do anything cool mesh. And he deserves a lot of blame for the late game plan and for not adjusting to what the 49ers were trying to do. It was bizarre to see out of him. It reminded me of some of the game plans we've yelled at him for before that are usually, I think, on the road on the West Coast. Like, I think they had one against the Raiders where it was just a bizarre 50 shotgun dropbacks, all the same play. It seems to happen to him once in a while. And maybe the 49ers just figured out the way sort of to get the Packers into those passing formations and sort of make that same thing happen. But he did not adjust well. It was a rough game plan.
What about Aaron Rodgers? Because we mentioned the Jones throw, but it's also the Lazard. You know, the F it, I'm throwing to Devontae deep with Lazard over the middle. That's the one everyone highlighted. But no, just in general,
Lazard was open over the middle, and also ESB was open.
He was open deep. He was open deep for left. Six. Yeah, that's true. The DeGuerra one too. I think. Goes under the radar a little bit, but that was going to convert a first down and prevent a punt. And he almost had it and maybe should have caught it, but it was also a rushed and bad throw that Aaron made.
There were also plays. There's a play in the first quarter where DeGuara was open over the middle, yeah. And it was before the DeGuara drop. So it wasn't even like
it wasn't vengeance.
He had hit the you're dead to me point yet. Yeah.
Yeah. Eyes that are untrained like mine just said, well, he lost faith in everybody except Devontae Adams. I don't know if
and
that's
the Aaron Jones.
Read it.
So and, yeah, Aaron Rodgers throwing to everyone who isn't Devontae Adams was like one catch for 9 yards or something like that.
Yep, just that
he
one.
He didn't even
conversion.
Target a wide receiver until the fourth quarter. Yep. Didn't even target another wide receiver until Lazard caught a 6-yard pass
for a first
in the
down.
Fourth quarter. That doesn't make any sense.
It makes no sense. The only time he targeted Cobb at all, by the way, Cobb was double covered as well, and Lazard was also open over the middle. That was a super dangerous throw that he never should have made. Here's the thing you can say about Aaron in this game. Like, the 49ers have a known vulnerability on deep balls, but the one time he kind of tried it to Devontae, he had safety help over the top. The 49ers did lose Ambry, whatever his name is, partway through the game. Josh Norman played, but the 49ers were smart about having to have Josh Norman's washed up ass out there and gave him safety help over the top. They bracketed Devontae with him. And Aaron tried to pick on Josh Norman, but it's hard when he has help. But when they gave him help, though, the other guys were open all the time. There was no help there. And they were often covered okay. But at some point, you got to challenge that. You got to give Lazard a chance. And Rodgers, you know, fear / conservatism on throwing interceptions hurts you in that scenario. On, you know, he'll give Devontae everything one-on-one, no problem. He sees Devontae one-on-one, it's the ball's coming. But Alan Lazard one-on-one, even against a kind of garbage corner, he's not going to do that. You actually have to still get open. And that hurt them in this game because risk-taking, I think, would have led to more points, and he just doesn't do that.
Should we talk about special teams?
Let's do it.
We have to?
Well, we already kind of did with crappy.
Okay. So
field goal kicking.
So tell you what, we already talked about the bad field goal kick. We talked about the block punt.
We mentioned that Debo returned to kick 50 yards, and
Amari Rodgers only did one of his stupid punt catches. Did you guys notice he cradled all but one?
Yeah,
he did his wide receiver catch. But he ran to the right and got some yards.
He was fine. They still should have activated David Moore, but he was fine.
Yeah. Total non-factor either way in my mind. But the kickoff to start the second half isn't, you know, like if that goes in the end zone, I think you wrote this down here, that the 49ers end up getting 3 points on the drive that starts at the 50 because of Debo's return.
Yep.
The 49ers made some dumb mistakes there, and that drive stalls leading to the field goal attempt. If it stalls further back, then that's not going to.
They don't get a field goal
attempt. So
yeah.
That's right.
Well, Mason Crosby can no longer even kick touchbacks, especially in the cold.
In the cold,
that's
just
the
killer
of Mason Crosby.
Yeah, I think that's
goodbye, true. Mason Crosby. Hello, JJ Molson.
That's right. It's going to put this game on ice.
It is a good name.
But, is he Canadian?
No, but he is connected to the Molson fortune. That is absolutely his family. I don't know exactly how. Olivia Reiner, who is with us, she now works in Philadelphia, but she knows him from college, I want to say. I don't know if he went to Northwestern. I think that's where she went to college. I'm probably mixing up all my facts, but I am 98% certain that JJ Molson is legitimately part of that Molson family.
Wow.
So there will be lots of beer jokes in the years ahead.
We all thought that Gerard DeBeer was going to stick around specifically just for the beer joke.
Tremendous upset that he's not a Green Bay Packer to this day.
Unfortunate.
Yeah, that DeBeer was a diamond in the rough, let me tell you.
Very nice. Very nice.
Was he on the same team as Jared Veld here? I don't think so. But
I think they both were on Arizona same time, maybe? No?
Yeah, I have no idea.
No idea.
JJ Molson definitely did not go to Northwestern. He went to UCLA, but there's a connection. Anyway, so you mentioned Oren Burks hurting AJ Dillon and this team low-key being terrible without AJ Dillon. Man, has he turned himself into a valuable asset, you know, to the point that they are a worse team when AJ Dillon is not available.
They really are. And
I don't know.
Jones got stuffed a bunch. On first and second down, they probably shouldn't have run him quite so much on first and second down. He was obviously still quite valuable because of the catching, but they definitely could have used Dillon for short yardage and just mauling people. He got close a few times to the end zone and ended up just pass, 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 sack, sack, whatever. That's Dillon time. That cost him for sure.
I'm dying at rundown number 10.E.
Corey wears tiny pants.
Have you guys ever noticed it before? I've never noticed Corey's tiny pants before. I went back because I was going to say, I was trying to make a case that the tiny pants cost Corey in this game, but not the case. Corey always wears tiny pants and has all season, and I just did not know that. Just so everybody knows, Corey Bajorquez has teeny tiny football pants that he wears, and you should go find a picture of him. And look, because he does, they're like biker. Everybody else has capri pants, and he's got biker shorts.
So. Right, because the traditional football pants have elastic at the bottom, and Corey Bajorquez's tiny pants are like biker shorts.
They are.
So they don't grab at the knee joint.
One thing I can tell you about Corey Bajorquez and his blocked punt and all the punts in this game was he did do his butt wiggle before all of them, and. Maybe he should stop that for a little bit. It's not helping.
So what we're learning is, as soon as the All-22 came out, Paul ran to it so he could look at Corey Bajorquez's butt.
No, I saw that live, and this is just a still shot.
Bajorquez, this game and this season has been quite the adventure because he had a couple boomers. He had a 59-yarder.
This
game, and also a total disaster punt, and then there's this punt that gets blocked, which. It's not his fault that it got blocked, but in real time, in my mind, he was moving so slowly, getting that ball into the air. Like I told you before this off mic, I really thought I thought in the moment that was going to get blocked. I thought something looked way wrong about it and just how slow it was developing. And maybe that was just my pessimism shining through, but I absolutely thought it was going to get blocked. And it totally was. It's like everything went wrong on that snap. Just crazy stuff.
He took forever to get it out. I do think he legitimately had a little snafu handling it or something like that. But the blocking is what got it blocked, and that was awful. And the 49ers showed the same look earlier in the game that they blocked this punt on. They overloaded the right side of the line. By the way, the Packer right side of their special teams is very, very light. It's like Chris Barnes and a bunch of other like light linebacker types. The guy who blocked this punt for the 49ers, whose name is eluding me at the moment, is a defensive end who weighs 270 pounds and is giant, ended up getting singled up on Stephen Wuerdl, who is a teeny tiny long snapper who weighs 240 pounds. I know we have a question on this later, but I did double check. Nobody on the 49ers broke any rules about blowing up the punter. The rule on that is if you're lined up on the line of scrimmage, you have to be outside of his shoulders, and everybody was. And once the snapper has cleared the snap and stands up, you can engage him. And that's what happened here. Wirtle stood up and he got trapped. He got trapped standing up. He did not get low. If you're a long snapper, I think the only rule that you have is hit the guy in front of you in the guts. Don't engage him at the chest level. And he basically got stood up and carried into the backfield. That should never happen. It's a complete disaster that it happened. But even though that happened, Henry Black needed to assist him. Henry Black was in the backfield checking out the rush, and actually earlier in the game had this exact thing happen, and he did slide over and help pick up an overload on the right side. Here, he actually steps around Wirtle, who's being pushed into him to clear into the secondary to start heading downfield. Not entirely his fault, and I don't know what he could have done, but he was definitely supposed to be helping out on the overload side, and he didn't. So, again, this is mostly, I think, coaching and partly personnel, because Stephen Wirtle did not acquit himself well in his short time as a Packer. I don't think he'll be back either.
Are there any players who are typical special teamers that you think that should stay? Oren Burks, maybe?
Oren Burks is the only one I can think of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who else? Because it's not like the backups were like Henry Black is not a good safety.
Oh, hey, by the way, on the subject of special teamers, Isaac Yiadom, who had just been cut.
Yeah.
I was a special teamer.
I was going to mention that. Because
He took to Twitter to defend Mo Drayton.
Oh dear!
It's like, bro, you're not gonna get your job back saying nice things about Mo Drayton.
Boy, are you
especially not? Because he ain't gonna be the special teams coach next year.
That's not the guy you want to align yourself with at all.
Yeah. So, like, 5 minutes after the game, he posted something along the lines of, "Like, Coach Mo is not, never was the problem."
I mean, this is a tale as old as time. The players saying they need to execute better to make the coach look better. They're not wrong, of course. That's true, but like. It's just a wholesale change, maybe.
Also, the coach needs to go over and slap Tyler Lancaster on the back of the head and go, "What the hell's wrong with you?"
Yeah,
like that's a coaching failure. I don't care. Like execution.
Oh, by the way,
a couple times.
Really
is
quick
execution.
If you want to criticize why the Packers were overloaded on the right side, okay, like you do need faster guys on special teams, but the right side of the Packer line is. Starting with center, Stephen Wirtle, who's 240 pounds, Chris Barnes, McDuffie, who is not a big guy, and then Tyler Davis, who is like 235 pounds soaking wet. That is the entire right side of the line that the 49ers lined up five guys against, with Henry Black in the backfield to help. It's frankly kind of incredible they didn't get anything blocked earlier.
This is twice now that a Packers team that I think we all thought could definitely win the Super Bowl loses a game in the playoffs where special teams played a major, major role, because you obviously have the onside kick against Seattle and the John Ryan fake field goal turned into a touchdown back in the early part of 2015. This is the bigger story here is that the Packers, no matter who the coach is, just struggle with this. And now this is a different general manager. Everything has changed about this Packers team except the quarterback and the kicker. So why does this continue, and is there a way to fix it? Can you fix that?
Well, JR.
Yes.
The Packers attempted to fix it in 2019, kind of. What's his name? He's the special teams coordinator for the Saints. Rizzi? Anyway.
It starts with an R in Italian. I know that.
Yeah, the Packers offered this guy, like, an embarrassingly low contract, and he gave him the finger and went to the Saints. Saints went on to have some of the best special teams in the league over the last 3 years.
They sure did.
Yeah, and the Packers got Mo Drayton.
Packers got, well, they got Menenga first when this would actually happened. But
Sean Menenga.
It didn't get better. I mean,
so you're saying
it happened in the Thompson era because the end of the roster was so weak because of just the UDFA philosophy that Ted did. And because they were good, they didn't draft particularly high. They didn't spend on free agents to fill gaps, especially on special teams. So that was a choice. That was you're just not that talented, and we don't care about special teams that much. More recently, though, I'm not sure exactly what. I think it's different now. I think, maybe the end of the roster is still not great, but it seems like a discipline issue and a coaching issue more than a talent issue at this point. So I think this is more fixable, to be perfectly honest, and it wasn't before. But, it keeps happening, and it keeps happening in ugly, ugly ways that kill them all the time.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
I know this goes back to when I said special teams. Yes, you could say it's going to cost you a game, but it also might not. And in this game, like, that's why I still look at the offense. I mean, as bad as it was, all-time terrible special teams performance, it still comes down to a field goal at the end, and you still, as the Green Bay Packers, scored only 10 points in a game where you were awesome on the first drive and scored a touchdown. So, like, that to me is the thing. And I mean, it's not like you have to pick why they lost. There's two very good reasons, the offense and the special teams. But, like, this offense is built to overcome that 10 times out of 10. Well, nine times out of 10. Even with a blocked punt touchdown, the most catastrophic of special teams miscues, and a blocked field goal that could have made a difference, they still should have won the game.
They still should have won. You're right.
With the passing of Meatloaf, the song should not be called Two Out of Three Are Bad.
Baby, we could talk all night.
Oh, boy. So,
but yes, two out of three are bad.
I think the worst part of it is that the defense gave us what we thought they might be if they had Jaire Alexander and Za'Darius Smith back. They were outstanding. They did not allow a touchdown. And you can see winning the Super Bowl with this defense coming together at the right time and the offense just playing normally. And then the offense comes out and just shits the bed.
Didn't San Francisco only have like 170 yards of offense?
It's very low. I don't know what the exact is, but yeah. I mean, the last two games they have against Jimmy in the playoffs, he has like 23 completed passes, something like that. And
Jimmy in the playoffs makes a really good doo-wop band name.
It does. So per Football Outsiders, this was the worst special teams performance of the season by any team in the NFL. They had a negative 30.8% DVOA in this game. And just puts a cap on the Packers season that they seem to put up every year. They also had the third worst performance of the season against the Bears. Outsiders does not count onside kicks in their special teams ranking because they consider them to be random. But if you do count the Packers onside kick, they lost to the Bears in that game. The Packers have the first and second worst performances of the year on special teams. And it matters a lot. They did a nice article.
It doesn't even take it.
Yeah, they did a nice article running down. Go ahead, JR.
No. It doesn't even take into account that they put 10 guys out on the field for the last.
We didn't even do that. Like, God, just embarrassing. I mean, you go through the whole
game. They're
going
to make the field goal anyway.
I know it doesn't matter. It's just like, it's such an embarrassment after you go through that whole game, just screwing up the whole game. And then you get to the last play, and then, yeah, it doesn't matter. But you can't put the right amount of people out there. It's just asinine. Yeah.
Goodbye, Mo Drayton.
Yep.
No, it's so okay. On the subject of Mo Drayton, we need to talk about what I saw.
That was awesome. You should describe it.
Incredible.
Absolutely incredible.
So good. So good.
So if you've never done a tour of Lambeau Field before, your tour starts in the atrium. And you all stand next to a sign, and your tour guide talks about the atrium and the renovation and all that. And so above the 1919 restaurant is a bunch of office space, including like media and whatnot. And the tour guide goes, yep, and up and up in those offices over there is the Packers social media team. No one else in my group looks. I look up. And in the window of the office is a very large cutout of Mo Drayton's face.
Yep, there sure is.
And the lights are off and that office is closed. So the Packers social media team put a picture of Mo Drayton in the window and then dipped.
If you want to see it, you should point out, go to Matt's Twitter feed and see it because he took a picture to his credit.
As you point out, the Green Bay Packers social media team is not one of the more... I wouldn't say adversarial, but like what we've seen with some of these pro sports teams brands is they'll you know, poke the bear and like interact with other teams and maybe like trash talk, do a little trolling. We don't really see that from the Packers. And honestly, that's probably fine. That's fine. They're above it. But like, that's not, it's not typical for them to do something that implies they have an opinion.
The phrase I used was hamstrung and milquetoast.
Exactly. Quite honestly, there is a lot of wisdom to doing social the way the Packers do it. A lot of wisdom. Just take a look at the Milwaukee Bucks, who I happen to think are great on social. But just this past weekend, there was an incident where Grayson Allen had a hard foul on Alex Caruso, and they every morning post a GIF of the next day's game. It's game night, you know, get excited, and they have a player eating a donut like it's the morning, but you know, get ready for the game that's later on tonight. Well, the next day they happen to play the Sacramento Kings, the day after Grayson Allen's foul put Alex Caruso out for 6 weeks with wrist surgery, and it's Grayson Allen eating a donut, being chill, like, hey, get ready for the game tonight. The Bulls did not like that.
The Bulls
responded with a seriously, and it blew up. It was a big deal.
Yep.
So the Bucks are great on social. I love them. But, you know, there's some wisdom to just playing it down the middle.
There is. So Outsiders ran the numbers for all of the worst special teams performances in playoff history. They did a top 10 list. The Packers have committed 3 of the 10. This game, and then 2 against Atlanta, which is kind of crazy. They point out Atlanta actually is on the receiving end of 5 of those games. But so the Packers have 3 out of 10, and the Seattle game doesn't make it, even though they have the Bostic play and the fake punt for a touchdown, because onside kicks don't count. But, I mean, onside kicks should count in that game, too. But also worth noting that the Packers also won the Super Bowl largely because of special teams, and the 1996 Patriots have the 9th worst special teams grade for giving up the touchdown to Desmond Howard and a couple big punt returns. So special teams really matters a lot. It can, in fact, win you / lose you the Super Bowl occasionally. And did. So,
JR, do you remember, Paul, earlier, I believe it was earlier this season, explained what is expected out of a punt returner?
No. Tell me again.
No fumbles and 10 yards.
Yes.
Well, that is what is expected.
That's not what we got.
Well, I was going to say Desmond Howard got no fumbles and 30 yards twice.
Yep. And a kickoff return.
So he was good for 7 points and 6 first downs.
This is why he was Super Bowl MVP.
Yeah.
And let me roll through a few. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was just going to hit some rapid fire because questions are looming here, but some rapid fire
questions are looming.
Mm-hmm. First of all, Rashawn Gary was a beast. Yep. He's totally worked out. Congratulations to him. He's a superstar. Well, super, not maybe, but star. He's a star player. Going back to the Mercedes Lewis fumble, George Kittle dropped a touchdown, which is like seeing a Sasquatch in the wild. So I definitely thought those two things sort of evened out. There is no question in my mind George Kittle would have scored there, and the Packers caught a huge break. Crazy break that the Packers caught when Kenny Clark did not sack Garoppolo late in the first half, and he went ahead and threw an interception to Adrian Amos
that was
near the goal line.
Yep.
Jimmy Garoppolo is really bad at this, and the Packers and 49ers traded breaks here. Elijah Mitchell with the rare offensive, as an offensive player, getting the personal foul face mask that cost them a chance to be on the 2-yard line. That was a field goal drive. And Eric Stokes having a pick six just gifted to him.
But he went looking for the ball.
looking for the tackle. Looking Jimmy Garoppolo tackle. Throws just a terrible ball. Terrible ball. And it was definitely pickable and touchdownable. Eric Stokes made the play. I mean, you can't – he's just – the ball skills will come. He's just working on that, but not a bad first year for Eric Stokes at all. And I think he's going to be a pretty good player, but wish he was keeping his head up on that play.
Yep. I also wanted to mention that the Packers had a 4th-and-2 in the second quarter with 7 minutes left. And the Baldwin bot and the fourth down bot both had him as a mild go for that. And they ended up trying to induce an offsides, which did not work. And they took a delay of game penalty and punted. So I want to mention that one, too. We saw a lot of aggressive fourth down plays this weekend, especially out of the Bills, and it paid big dividends, and the Packers didn't have many of them. This is the only one. It would have been risky for sure, but I think they probably should have done it.
Well, at least they didn't burn a timeout. It's mild improvement.
Yeah, true enough.
All right, before we get to questions, JJ Molson is in fact eighth generation Molson family, the beer empire. Eighth generation is JJ Molson. So we can expect all the beer jokes to floweth.
Do you think that he's JJ Molson the eighth?
I don't. Well, it could be.
I am.
John Molson was the patriarch. I don't know. After eight generations in your 1700s, you get to be the patriarch still, or is there a bigger name for that? I don't know. But
The eight triarch.
That's so stupid, but I love it. Okay. And any last thoughts before we get to the questions?
I don't think so. We'll probably do a season wrap up where we can talk about the future. So we can.
Oh, 100%.
We have a lot of questions. Do your thing.
Can I preface the questions?
Yes,
okay, so as of right now, we are on page 4 of the rundown out of 13.
Yep.
What?
We are an hour into the podcast. This is when we are finally
45
going to
minutes,
pull rank.
Yeah.
45 minutes.
Only Patreon will get their questions answered because you guys are animals. So if you want to make sure that on a heavy traffic night, you get your question answered, give us money.
Nice.
It's true.
We will
save Twitter questions for next week. We have a lot to talk about with Aaron Rodgers' future, with the future of this team in general. Yep. Russ Ball. We turn our weary eyes toward you to make your magic happen. But we will get to all that stuff. But right now it's just Patreon questions.
Many Patreon questions, by the way. Thank you to everybody on Patreon for asking good questions, for being patrons, and for putting up with us for a year. We really do appreciate it. So. Let's answer away.
I'm also going to say this is probably the wrong place for this. We could do this at the wrap up, but I love the feedback we've gotten and the community that's kind of been built here. Like, I am not going to lie to you. For the first couple of years, I thought, well, I'll help you with this podcast, but I'm not going to do this long term because I don't know with the depth that you guys know the football, and I didn't think I was a really good fit. But I have grown to just, this is like one of my favorite parts of the week.
Yep.
And I love hearing from people. And the fact that we have so much engagement is really great. I do the Journal Sentinel podcast, and those obviously get a fair amount of readership, but it's not like this. It's not, there isn't a community around it. So I enjoy this. I enjoy this.
Yeah.
All right.
I love Tuesday record night. They're great. All right. Let's answer the paying people.
Mark Butscarby asks, in all caps, should the Packers put a roof on Lambeau in order to help win playoff games? The answer is yes.
Yes.
But not really.
Yeah. I mean,
you know what? Even I am coming around to the idea that, quote unquote, football weather isn't a real thing.
Yeah, it's not. It's a passing league. You know, this is not Monsters of the Midway, rawr, grind it out thing anymore. That's cold weather football. This is all precision aeronautics. You want it to be nice. You want a good environment for this.
So I can't wait for Northrop Grumman to get their own team.
I do feel like the Packers are
Lockheed Martin.
Yeah, they're kind of in like an almost like Rockies kind of situation where it's very hard if you're the Colorado Rockies with your stupid altitude to build a team that's capable of winning both in Colorado and on the road in normal places because you just build muscle memory for your home park with balls breaking less severely and things like that. It hurts you on the road. It's not like the Rockies have never done it before, but it's tricky. They're a dumb franchise run by morons, but I do think they have it against them. And the Packers, I do think it's tricky to build a team that's going to be a good regular season team that's a high-flying passing offense, which is what you want as an offense, and then to get into a snowy, crappy game and have to turn around and grind things out. You're going to run into trouble doing that, and they have before against the Giants a few times with like Ahmad Bradshaw and Brendan Jacobs, and it does hurt them sometimes. So it's tricky. I don't envy them.
To their credit, the Packers have tried to build with Aaron Jones and AJ Dillon. They've tried to build up that part of it. It's just this matchup was the worst for that because you have a team capable of stuffing the run. So,
San Francisco
was AJ Dillon.
Yeah, San Francisco was second against the run coming into this game in the snow game in the weather. It's just it's a bunch of crap coming together to stymie them again, and then AJ Dillon getting hurt. Just very, very unfortunate set of circumstances.
Yeah, I do think a roof would be better. I bristle at the feedback with the Aaron Rodgers situation, where you have some people have said, and not a critical mass, but. Well, it's just not working. Whatever it is, it's just not going to work with Aaron Rodgers. It's time to move on. And to that, I say preposterous. Yeah. You know, like that's it's anecdotal, not systematic. I think that's how Andrew Brandt put it on his podcast. It's just bad matchups and weird plays and fluke moments. Aaron Rodgers is still the best you have, but I guess the only way you could accept that viewpoint is if you say Aaron Rodgers isn't, like, what makes him good doesn't necessarily work as well in 0 degree temperatures. And so maybe you invest elsewhere and stop trying to get that passing dynamo, because you're going to be mitigated to a degree in the cold. Although I don't know if I believe that. Like, they've also had great game. That game against the Giants where they really crushed it, where Aaron Rodgers was at his absolute best.
Yeah.
That was a cold game too. That wasn't 2007 cold, but it was cold.
They've done it occasionally. The Bears NFC Championship game in 2010 was a Soldier, but it was cold as hell. And they won it.
Yeah,
and
the
it
passing was, game wasn't good. In
it
that
wasn't
game, though.
Though, but they still won it. It was a grind, but they still won it. Yeah. So it's not impossible. It's just it does, I think, work against them sometimes. I even wonder if this game was a day game instead of a night game. There was the weather was beautiful during the day. It was like 6-7 degrees warmer, and maybe the ball just flies a little further, and you can see better in the sun without the snow blowing in your face. Even that might have been enough for the difference.
Yeah. Packers' success works against them.
Day game. Oh, slater of the night game.
Packers had one game this year at noon at Lambeau. One. That's insane. Very weird.
That is nuts.
Jesse Genigen asks, what the fuck? Also, how dare they?
Right? Totally.
Totally true.
I know, man.
Patrick Detmer also asking in all caps, am I correct in thinking that Aaron Rodgers absolutely believes we're living in a simulation?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he believes...
Oh, man, what's that?
He believes a lot of random bad hypotheses about the world. And the simulation hypothesis actually has some halfway decent support as possibly being true. For those of you unfamiliar with the simulation hypothesis, it is the idea that we will, in this world, eventually invent computers sophisticated enough to simulate other worlds. And given that fact and the ability to simulate more worlds than the world you're in, the odds are that you are in a simulation. So that's the simulation hypothesis in short. And he probably believes that, yes.
I mean, it's entirely possible, because he likes to adapt very hard to whatever he's reading or listening to that week, that he just saw the Matrix trilogy and really took it to heart.
Yeah.
Aaron Rodgers is Ted in that episode of How I Met Your Mother, where they keep showing him in embarrassing situations and he answers with, but she's really hot.
That's a tremendous comparison.
Yes, yes, it is.
Oh, man.
That works too, because Ted's an asshole and Aaron's an asshole. So that works perfectly. It's a great comp. He totally is Ted.
And they also a lovable both think asshole. They're smarter than they are.
Totally. Ted's a perfect comp.
Yeah, it's a thing where it is a perfect comp. You love him. You think he's great. And then after time, you're like, he's kind of awful. Mm-hmm. But he's still the main character.
Like, look,
you still
I love
can't
this.
Have the show without him.
Yep.
Yeah, it's like, I love this guy, but he straight up sucks.
Yeah, that's right. R.I.P. Bob Saget.
R.I.P. Bob Saget. Bob Saget.
Yeah,
Dr.
Who's
Hillbilly.
Old Ted.
Also,
you know,
in all caps.
There's so many all caps questions.
I don't know if that's like...
I may have prompted this in Patreon with the question that I asked. Because, you know, it's always like, R.I.P. call for questions, and then I write something. I may have written swear in all caps. That may have happened.
All caps.
Yeah.
All right. Dr. Hillbilly, I have so many questions. Feel free to pick one. This is in lesser caps. Why insist on signing Cobb, who prevented us from signing Odell, and then only target him once? I'm not sure I...
Yeah, and target him on the worst play possible.
He was never open in
this
game.
I didn't know that was a thing.
So it's kind of a tongue-in-cheek thing, but had they not given money to... first, they could not have signed Odell Beckham, even with the without moving a lot of money. The Rams upbid them substantially. But, you know, every little thing hurts, and Kevin King and Randall Cobb I've seen tossed around as... If you hadn't done this, you maybe could have done this instead. So, yeah.
Oh, by the way, on the game losing run that put the Niners within field goal range.
Oh yeah,
Kevin King was playing safety.
Yeah, he was. Not sure what happened there, but he totally was.
But he made the tackle. So,
so Cobb, I'm not sure he should have played in this game, because Cobb was coming back from. Core muscle surgery, right? The same thing that knocked out Lazard for like a year, more or less, with ineffectiveness. And he was ineffective. He was not getting open. He was never open once in this game. It would have been better to have any other player playing his position. So
maybe David Moore.
David Moore would have been he's not a bad comp. That would have been fine. so yes. All right. On to Hillbilly 2.
Former Packers, Randall Cobb and Kevin King. While line when Yash held up during the last meeting.
Yeah,
well,
we talked about
why
that.
Not reshuffle, or the supplement to that, why not reshuffle once it became clear Kelly couldn't hold up?
Because instead of making any adjustments, Matt LaFleur decided to instead piss down his pants.
Yeah, I don't get that. That's the big thing. Like, why not fix it? Like, it's one thing if it sucks for a half, but surely you anticipated this possibly not working. Like, you're going with Billy Turner at left tackle and Dennis Kelly at right tackle. That might not work. You haven't done it before. You should be ready to switch. Who knows? Just bizarre.
And then the last one, why not throw to someone besides Devontae? That is a question for Aaron Charles Rogers. Mm-hmm. Is it Charles? I think I did that wrong.
Yes, his middle name is Charles.
Oh, I got it right. Okay, great.
In the words of the famous Juggernaut overdub, shut the fuck up, Charles.
I have no idea what that means, but that's great.
You've never seen I'm the Juggernaut, bitch?
It's from the first X-Men movie,
thing?
Right?
Yeah. Okay, so it's referenced in the first X-Men movie, but it was the original X-Men cartoon dubbed over by this guy. And it went viral in like the E-Bombs world era.
Had no idea.
Yes.
And he's like, yeah, it's a Juggernaut, bitch. And then he like picks up Charles Xavier and throws him across the room and goes, shut the fuck up, Charles. Beat your ass.
All right.
Oh, wow. Why am I laughing? That's funny. Jay Google in all caps. Is this a top three all-time dog shit performance from QB1 in his career as a Packer?
I don't think so.
I'm surprised Paul doesn't have it broken down by NEA in dog shit performance.
I meant to look it up, but it's just not. Like he was very bad.
D/S.
He's been worse. He has multi-interception games. He has games where he's super ineffective. So yeah, he was bad.
But well, he
wasn't even the worst. He was better than Garoppolo was. I mean,
yeah.
Oh yeah.
But I can think of two games where Roger was worse in recent memory.
Yeah.
There was one last year, this year. It was last year, right? Well, where he had like a game of like 90.
The Saints game, he was worse than this game.
Yeah, that's this year.
Yeah.
This year, Saints game was worse. And then the Broncos 2016.
Yeah, that was not good.
He was low-key not great in 2019, and I say not great in the most relative term. I mean, obviously, yeah. Aaron Rodgers hasn't had, like, a truly bad season, but 2019, when they went to the NFC Championship game against San Francisco, he had a couple duds in there for
sure.
He did.
Mm-hmm. And, like, he needed to play better than he played in this game. Don't get us wrong, but he's definitely played worse a bunch of times.
All right, Tim Brown, don't call me Tim Braun, which I had been doing. He's correcting the pronunciation as he should.
Do you think his middle name is Ryan?
I don't.
No, I don't either.
No, but nobody does Ryan as a middle name. And that, like, hasn't happened yet.
Who's Ryan Brown? Tim. That's not a guy.
That's not a guy. Tim Brown says, was the bull rush on the long snapper illegal play by San Francisco? Definitely on the block punt, or on the San Francisco defense on the block punt. I didn't think you could do that. You did talk about that.
You're not allowed to line up over the center and blow him up while he's still in his squad after snapping the ball. But once he is finished snapping the ball and pops up to engage, you can do whatever you want to him. And the 49ers did. That was a perfectly legal play. They lined up properly. The guy who actually ran into him was like two steps off the line just to give him that time, just ran full steam into him just as he stood up. And that's totally fine. It was legal, unfortunate, but true.
PJ Nuclear Vessels. Thank you for that adjustment. No question. Just a big thank you for another great season of episodes. Aww.
Thanks, PJ.
You see, this is exactly what JR was talking about. You nut bars. Start doing this community thing and making us get the warm and fuzzies, and then we keep making this content.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I still hate you, Matab. Alex Lamer says, can you walk us... Can you walk us through the options with Rodgers and how it affects the cap? Staying in Green Bay, retiring, or a trade? Would the Packers potentially try to package another big contract with Rodgers in a trade to get a bigger haul? So this is something I think we'll spend more time on next time, but maybe some Cliff's Notes versions here, Paul.
Matt, do you know the retirement fallout if he retires?
I'm pretty sure the retirement is treated the same as a post June 1st cut.
Okay, so it's June 1st. The bottom line is, if they cut him or trade him, it costs them $26 million against the cap. If you June 1st him, you can do some shenanigans with moving money into the next year. But fundamentally, that's what it is. It's $26 million that you got to deal with. If you keep him, he counts. If you don't restructure, he counts $46 million against the cap.
Okay. Apparently, if someone retires, you retain their rights and their cap hit disappears.
Oh, really? Oh, that, mm-hmm. Well, that's nice. Root for that. That's why I was trying to find it and I couldn't find it.
The exemption. Oh, here we go. This is why I was thinking Aaron doesn't change. The exemption is a player who is 35 plus and signed a multi-year contract. That player retires, the cap hit remains.
Okay. There you go. So it's still there. So if he stays, if he sticks on the team, they cannot pay him $46 million next year. I mean, they can't have a cap hit of $46 million next year. So if they keep him, they have to restructure him. They have to push money into the future, into more void years. And that's just how that has to happen. That's how it's set up right now. If they trade him, there's nothing you can do about that. It's $26 million in dead money. It saves them $20 million over if they keep him, if they don't restructure him. But that's what you're looking at. So any trade or cuts, the same phenomenon. The bonus money comes due immediately, and that's what you're hit with. So that's what you're looking at with Aaron. Keep and extend and push that money off into the future, or trade slash cut, and it's $26 million either immediately or if June 1st is involved, spread between two seasons.
Okay. And
that's it.
I can't believe we went from Juggernaut to discussing retirement and didn't get a retire bitch reference, but
retire bitch.
I should mention I'm bad at the cap and always ask text to explain it to me. So if I get anything minorly wrong there, totally possible. But that's the gist of it. It's 26 versus 46.
And I always
details may be slightly different.
Ken,
yeah, go see Ken Ingles. He now, always explains it.
And my understanding is the cap is going to expand after the 2022 season. So how does that play into it? I mean, because we've talked about how Russ Ball just kicks the can downstream. Doesn't that mean that you just keep kicking it until the salary cap gets bigger?
So yes. Essentially,
that's
yes.
What the Saints do.
I mean, the thing is here, nobody knows exactly how big it's going to get, but it will get bigger. There's new deals coming into play. When money grows, the salary cap grows. So yeah, you can punt it down the road with the expectation that you have more space. But even doing that, eventually the Piper comes due, and it still puts you at a competitive disadvantage against the other teams who also get expanded cap but don't have dead money taking away from it and can still outbid you for things. So it doesn't, you know, put you in the over the cap situation.
And also sometimes there's a global pandemic and the cap shrinks.
And the cap shrinks. That happens sometimes too.
I think it was, this is only slightly related, Dusty Evely, I think, is the guy who wrote today after it was news came out that Sean Payton was retiring, something to the effect of, I bet Sean Payton has a clause that if he retires, Taysom Hill's contract becomes automatically guaranteed, which made me laugh. And then someone posted, I think, a major, like The Ringer or something, posted the gif of Ralph Wiggum on Simpsons. Taysom Hill with news that Sean Payton is retiring. I'm in danger. former Saint Taysom Hill. Alex Lamers asked, does the rolling special teams catastrophe all season mean there is a deeper institutional failure that we should all be worried about going forward? Kind of touched on this.
Yeah, we did. But yes, there is. They should burn it down and start over.
There are so many rolling references I want to make in response to that. Like, you just keep rolling. Or
no. Turn your hat backwards now.
Yeah.
What you know about rolling down in the deep.
There's a good soul coughing song called Rolling.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. I think I know the just two soul coughing songs.
Can you guys not talk about 90s grunge music for just 1 week?
They're not grunge. They're acid jazz.
Oh, yes.
I need that in a soundboard.
I forgot, by the way, that Chris Barnes plays special teams. So there are two special teams players that should be kept when they tear it down and burn it down and try again. Jason Spitz. Jason Spitz asks, I'm going to assume it's over, that Rodgers, Adams, Jones are gone. And that a pretty severe rebuild will be underway shortly. Do you trust Murphy Goody with that rebuild? I wish I had more confidence in the brain trust. I also wish we could reinvent Ron Wolf in this prime and give him full power like the good old days. Man, I trust Kudakus. He had a great year, I thought.
I trust him too. I think that they're a smart, savvy front office, and they've played this, you know, aside from Aaron being a weirdo, they've played it pretty well. Jones, by the way, will probably be back. If you cut him outright, he costs you $1 million. If you June 1st, I mean, you can save money. So maybe they do that because they, you know, don't spend money on running backs, but it's not
so
quite as simple.
So the exact numbers are pre June 1st. It costs you $750,000.
Oh,
overall,
that's not too bad. Okay.
$750,000. Right. Post June 1st, it saves you $5 million.
$5 million. Okay. So maybe they do that. Maybe Jones is gone. They're going to need all the cap space they can get. They should not have.
So it'll cost $3 million to cut him, but you'll save. Yeah. It's not good.
Yeah.
They extended him to try and appease Aaron Rodgers.
But, like, I think that Russ Ball is still on this team. And so, in terms of cap manipulation, they still are experts in it. And Gutekunst has been very good in talent evaluation. So, I think they'll handle a teardown fine. I think they have, if Rodgers moves on, it's very clear what they have to do. And I don't think they'll be stupid about it. I think that they will handle it fine. And, you know, do what needs to be done to get him back. So that's fine. They're not going to do better. Think about all the crap teams in our division who've been through so many bad front offices and coaches just trying to get to where the Packers are. Like, these guys have been running it. Like, let him do it. Gutekunst signed a bunch of good people. He's found bargains. He's found Rasul Douglas. Like, that's a guy you want running things. That's totally trust him.
Steven Kurtz asks... Is the 2010 playoff run and Super Bowl win the outlier in the AR era? I mean, on the surface, of course it is. They were the sixth seed. They had to fight to get into the playoffs. They then won three road games as the was the 1250 that calls it the magic carpet ride. I mean, it was a total everything went right moment, except, as you pointed out, either last week or the week before, they were number one in DVOA.
They were.
So they weren't. They were a sneaky, great team that had to fight and claw to get into the playoffs. But I mean, you don't expect any six seed to just go win three road games en route and then win the Super Bowl. So that is an outlier.
I mean, we just watched a six seed win two.
Yeah, I know. Well, Pittsburgh Steelers did it. Pittsburgh Steelers were a six seed and won the Super Bowl. It's been done. I'm just saying you don't expect it. That is an outlier. Heck, it's an outlier in the fact that they weren't a top two seed. They do this more often than not.
Yep.
I just feel like, I mean, I feel like the Seattle season, I mean, they had that game won. That game was won. It required something totally random and totally you know, impossible to predict to cost them a chance to go to the Super Bowl that year.
Something I just reminded of, you mentioned the list of 15 things in the Seattle game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Zach Cruz, now of Packers Wire, back then was writing for Cheesehead TV. He wrote an article of like 21 things that all absolutely had to go Seattle's way.
Yeah, yeah.
And it is extensive.
Yeah.
Like that might be the luckiest game by a single team ever.
Probably is. Probably.
Like even more lucky than like the immaculate reception.
Like, yeah, that was pretty lucky. But all Super Bowl wins are outliers. That's the thing. Brady's an outlier for having as many as he does, but it takes luck and skill to actually win the thing. It's a single elimination tournament. And yeah, it should be viewed as an outlier because it absolutely is an outlier. But they should have had a few more, and they just had bad luck and weird crap happen to them. So, you know, football's hard. It's hard to win things in single elimination tournaments repeatedly. It's very difficult.
And in a salary cap league, there are still haves and have-nots in the NFL. But in the playoffs, there aren't as many. The despair. I mean, we had a really bad weekend. The first weekend in the wild card round, but the divisional round, like all these teams are good.
Yeah.
They're all good. Like even yes, the Packers should have beaten San Francisco, but that's a good team. Like there's not going to be a lot of difference between any of these teams. And we've seen home field advantage erode over the last several years, not just pandemic related, although that turned home field advantage into almost nothing in the NFL. So it's like you said, I just think it doesn't matter how good you are. You're never going to be good enough to just blow your way into a Super Bowl. I felt like maybe those Cowboys teams or the 49ers teams in the mid-90s that won 49ers Super Bowl run, or even the Packers in 96, like those teams were the best team in football. It was preordained and it happened. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's going to happen anymore. I think it requires a fluky finish. Certainly every team that's still alive can say they've had a fluky finish because all four games came down to the last,
absolutely,
the last snap. So that's crazy. You just got to get away with it. Packers didn't get away with it. That's all.
Yeah, I mean, Buffalo's going to be talking about giving up a field goal in 13 seconds for the next decade, and it happens sometimes.
Speaking of special teams, if they squib kick it, they're going to.
They are. Oh, they screwed that up so bad.
Yeah, but that's a retro, like, hindsight thing, I feel like, because what if they squib kick it and they screw that up and the guy returns it to the 50?
There were a lot of people in real time saying they need to squib kick it, and you don't even need to necessarily squib it. You can just do a pop up to the 5. And you know, force either
that's what they should have done.
Force either
100%
fair catch it at a 5 or kick. Yeah, or a small return to waste time. It puts them in a really bad situation. So that was the way to go.
I completely agree with you. SpongeBob says,
not SpongeBob.
Uses a name that I love. Senor Bob.
Senor Bob.
Senor Bob. My eyes are already glazing over. This hasn't even been that long and my eyes are glazing over. Beat writer Matt Schneiderman of The Athletic speculated that Rodgers and a franchise tagged Adams will net Green Bay 4 first round picks, 2 second round. What are the Packers likely to get back in a Rodgers trade? Does Adams on franchise tag have trade value?
Rodgers gets at least 2 first round picks and a young player on a rookie contract who is ascending. Like, the only realistic trade I've ever heard out of this has been 2 firsts, Jerry Jeudy, and a defensive starter.
Something like that, yeah. You're getting an MVP-level quarterback for a year. You're going to get 2 firsts. I agree with that. The problem with Matt Schneidman's particular trade is it's difficult for one team to trade a whole bunch of first-round picks at the same time. It happens occasionally, but
the Broncos could do it this year.
Yeah, they could. They have a lot. There are some rules around it, so they could do it. And you also have the salary cap to fit tagged Adams and a Rodgers restructure, which, again, you could maybe make that work too. But yeah, it's worth something like that. It's just, I'm not sure Denver's going to do that whole thing just to get both of them in there. You know, maybe they will, but you do want to shop around a little bit when you do these kinds of things. You want people bidding against other people to get the maximum out of it. But I'm not sure Adams is going to get you 2 more first rounders. He's very good, but he's going to be expensive and old. So I think you maybe get more like combined 3.
Seattle was stupid enough to give up a first for a safety who plays linebacker.
That's true.
Just for the opportunity to pay him.
It happens. It happens.
If they manage this trade, do they? This is fodder for another week. Do you think Jordan Love is the next quarterback of the Green Bay Packers? Or do you think somebody else?
I think Jordan Love is the de facto next quarterback of the Green Bay Packers.
I think if they want to tank, he's the appropriate selection.
All right. But they're not going to tank. Why would they tank?
There's a lot of really good quarterback prospects in 2022.
Right, not 2022, 2023.
Well, like the 2022 graduating class, I should say.
Sure. Still the 23, I think. But Ted Johnson, on a scale of 1 to, oh, Jesus Christ, what is this? How bad will the Packers be with Jordan Love at the helm of a salary cap team? I still don't. I mean, this division sucks.
That's the problem.
I think they win at least half their divisional games.
So
I think they're an 8-9 team at worst.
I think they're a 3-win.
I think he's atrocious. And the division is bad, which makes them less atrocious record-wise. But I'd say they're like a 5-win team with Jordan Love starting. I just think he's not any good at all. So I'd go like 5-6. But they're not going to be bad enough to get a top quarterback pick. So that's... maybe I'm overrating how many people they actually managed to bring back in salary cap hell, and they like super tank like the Lions, but I don't think so, and I think they still managed to win a few too many games with Love, but I do think he sucks. I think he's bad.
I just love how you have to get that last.
Gotta get it in there.
But I do think he sucks.
But a reminder, he sucks.
He sucks.
I keep coming back to this, and I did hear somebody say this, but I feel like we're the only people that have pointed this out. You're going to have to decide whether to pay Love after this next year, because that's the problem with drafting a quarterback and then having him sit on the shelf for a while, is that his clock is still ticking and he's going to need that second contract. You have to make up your mind about it. This is where the pandemic really screwed things up, because they didn't get any evaluation going into the 2020 season, and things have been pretty limited thereafter. It's just such a shitty set of circumstances. He might not be good, but they certainly can't say for sure that he is good. They don't have enough info. So now they're up in a situation where he, you know, you're gonna have 1 year of him and then decide what to do next, whether you want to give him that second contract. They just shouldn't have drafted him. I mean, like, if they could have known the pandemic would do what it's done, would last like it has, you know, maybe, I don't know, maybe
1 year's a way to 1 year's plenty. If he plays next year, they'll know. You can tell.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. You're right. You're right. They'll have the data they need. All right. Let's see. This is also continuing Ted Johnson. Since Paul missed the Milwaukee Tailgate podcast this week, I'll reiterate the question that Breen and Top punted on and add some context. Both Council, Craig Council, the Brewers manager, of course, and Matt LaFleur seem to catch some flack for their success or lack thereof in the playoffs. Who do you trust more in the playoffs in their respective sports, Council or LaFleur? Who has had more success? I will answer this and say that I trust Council more because I don't believe the manager truly makes a damn bit of difference in the game of baseball. He does. But I think Craig Council does all the things right that he is supposed to, that puts his team in the best chance to succeed. I still think it's less true in the playoffs than it is in the regular season, but I still think the manager has less influence over the on-field outcomes than Matt LaFleur does. And Matt LaFleur, I still feel like football coaches, you know, it's not like the game changes in the playoffs of the NFL. So I don't know how much worse a football coach could truly be, but there have been some play calling questions the last couple of years, and that has maybe played a role in the difference between the game.
Yeah. Council had a bad playoff last run, and I think that's why the question pops up. But I think that bad playoff was almost entirely the result of Devin Williams punching a brick wall and breaking his hand right before it, and just tying up their bullpen and making him not be able to do the things that he likes to do. He had some weird hitting decisions too, but I think a lot of that was based on not wanting to switch out as much as normal. I trust Council more. Council is extremely smart and runs, like, usually a near-perfect baseball team. I trust Matt LaFleur pretty well too, but I do think he had a bad game here. I think he's had a few other bad playoff games and is a little slow to adjust when elite defenses start to slow his offense down. So I'll go with Council as well. And I think Council matters more than JR does, but he is fundamentally right that football, even if that's true in a baseball sense, football coaches matter way more than baseball managers do. So LaFleur has a much larger impact on the game than Council does, but I trust Council more.
I mean, you know, I love Council. Yeah. I love him. I think he does everything right. I just, what you're saying, like, the football coach matters more to the in-game action than the manager controls the bullpen changes. That's it. And that's a big deal. That's a big deal. But it's not as important as calling the damn plays. All right.
Haha, baseball.
I thought you might want to chime in there. All right, Ted Johnson.
Ted getting greedy here.
During a Packers game. Paul, during a Packers game, started a drinking game for Packers special teams miscues earlier this year on Twitter. Paul wisely shut the game down during the same above-referenced Packers game due to several miscues. Had he not, would he have been vicariously liable for inducing alcohol poisoning to his followers had said game been carried out the rest of the season? Paul, you are a lawyer.
Ted asks
so
me,
tell us,
Ted's
would
you a lawyer.
Be liable?
Ted's also a lawyer, and he asks me legal questions all the time. You would not be liable. There's nothing binding or incentivizing you to do this. You're still fundamentally responsible for your own drinking. There's no dram shop law that would apply in this scenario to overdrinking. I don't owe anybody a duty of care. I can go yell at people all day to drink too much and barf, and that doesn't do anything liable-wise to me. So, no, I would not be vicariously liable for any alcohol poisoning. Matt is cracking up.
I'm sorry. Now I've just imagined Paul, like, running into a bar and just yelling, drink too much and barf, and then leaving.
What about cult leaders that influence people to commit crimes?
Okay.
Or seppuku.
Oh my God.
It's an interesting First Amendment question. So the most relatable example you'll probably find is the fighting words exception to the First Amendment. And the way I like to explain
the fight,
it's an actual First Amendment exception.
I know.
It's like incitement.
But it's a stupid name. Like,
it is.
I was going to say it's a stupid name. Like, stand your ground. Like.
So in the instance of a cult leader, I think it is possible they could be found liable. What is punished in this instance is the conduct that the speech does create, not really the speech itself. And if you do get people to commit a crime or do something along those lines, it's reasonably foreseeable. That's probably not the right term. Lawyers don't go and yell at me. You can be charged with something like incitement to violence, or based on the fighting words exception. So a cult leader, yes. I am not a cult leader of people drinking on Twitter.
Bullshit.
I don't think it is reasonably foreseeable that people will drink themselves to death because I run a tongue-in-cheek drinking game on Twitter, and I would be protected by the First Amendment for that reason.
If I joined a cult, I really hope that you're my leader. I'm very glad to have gone from special teams to cult the law of cult leadership.
What I want next season is for Paul to have a like EULA like screenshot and just like post it at the bottom of every one of his tweets about the drinking game.
Jeez.
Did you read the fine print? Okay. Philly Joel Osment, would you rather watch the Packers lose in the playoffs? Pick any game. Watch the 2016 election with that uncle, or three, opt to be waterboarded with room temperature Schlitz for 5 minutes and in exchange only have to see the first quarter of either option one or two.
Wait, the first quarter of the 2016 election, though, that still includes like months.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I'm going to just watch the
Schlitz. I'll take the Schlitz with a Packer playoff.
I've seen the
warm Schlitz.
It's being waterboarded with it. That's no good.
Yeah. Right.
But have you ever drank Schlitz? Like, it's basically like waterboarding yourself.
I like Schlitz. Yeah, that's an extremely specific question. Yeah. I don't know if I have an answer. Mark Putzcarby. I just scrolled up. I see Danny Noonan creeping in from the bottom of the screen here. But Mark Putzcarby again. If the Packers bring back Rodgers and Adams but are forced to lose key players like Douglas, Campbell, the Smith brothers, etc., are they a Super Bowl contender next year? Or with all the talent they lose, are they more likely to win a crappy division and bow out of the playoffs early? Right. I would also point out Douglas, Campbell, the Smith brothers, they're probably all gone anyway, yeah. No matter what happens.
They probably are.
Yeah. If Aaron and Devontae come back, they will find a way to magically sign everyone, but they will shoot themselves in the foot for like the next 5 years. It would truly be the last dance. There is no coming back from dancing the cap twice in a row. But no, without those guys, they're not Super Bowl contenders. Something like 14 people need new contracts.
Yeah. So let's assume they lose everybody. They do keep Adams and Rodgers. I do think they're contenders next year, even with a lack of depth, because they will make the playoffs. The division's terrible and Rodgers will get them into the playoffs. And then the NFC is not ascending. It's getting weaker. Tom Brady will possibly be retiring. That hurts Tampa immensely. That takes away one of the large contenders that you have there. The 49ers, who just beat us, are certainly no juggernaut and beatable by a Rodgers team.
Oh, also, just breaking like 15 minutes ago, it looks like Byron Leftwich is leaving Tampa.
Yeah.
To do what?
To be Jacksonville, right?
Coach the Jaguars. Yeah.
Good for Jacksonville. And it's not like the Rams are that good. Like, yeah, okay. Are Stafford and Kupp going to do this again? Maybe. Is that defense going to stay as good? I mean, it's not a good division. It's not a good conference. And with Rodgers and Adams, even without depth, a little bit of injury luck still makes you a Super Bowl front runner. Yes. I think they get smoked by the AFC team probably. But, you know, you never know. Upsets happen there too. So, yeah.
I also wonder if they've caught lightning in a bottle with the defenders mentioned here, particularly Douglas and Campbell, mm-hmm. and then the Smith brothers, maybe because they're getting older too. I mean, Za'Darius just missed the whole season with injury. Like, how much do you expect to get out of him? I don't know.
He got a sack on accident.
Yeah, he did. It was beautiful. Yeah. But
all
it was
right, Danny
accident.
Noonan. Should the Packers have just traded Aaron Rodgers back when he did those David Gruber commercials? Is this what existential, like, would you rather have had all the heartbreak or you know, like a better shot down the road for one title or something? I don't know.
I think
I know.
When you're going to trade Aaron Rodgers.
Who's David Gruber?
Let me finish. when you have to trade Aaron Rodgers, you want to get as many teams as possible bidding on him. And so you need to be able to make more than one call.
Yes. David Gruber. Matub is a extremely well-known name in Milwaukee. He has an endless array of commercials. He is a lawyer, a law firm, personal injury law firm, I believe, in Milwaukee.
That is correct.
And he's on TV every commercial break of every sporting event.
So he's a local commercial ambulance chaser.
Yes.
Well, yeah, I guess, but you know, he's not chasing because he's like, the last thing you want to do is drive your car through Milwaukee traffic. We'll come to you. They're not chasing ambulances. They're driving to houses.
So but, we have one of those.
Everybody's got one, but yeah.
Everyone's
Hank,
got one.
Hank Azar, the strong arm.
Nice.
Did you get
nice.
In a motorcycle accident? Call the strong arm.
I believe in Detroit, it's Jumana K. Ruse.
It is. On you are board, correct.
But yes, but in Milwaukee, David Gruber, huge sports fan. You'll find him on, you know, not far from the floor at Bucks games. He's done several commercials wearing like Brewers apparel and stuff like that. Very low key guy is my understanding in person, like just very chill and kind of reserved. That is not the persona you see on the commercials.
Yep.
But you know, good sports fan. Gives a lot of money to the sports programs and stuff. So like he
knows.
I have no problem with him.
He knows how to work himself into the community. That is for sure.
That is for sure. We do have a great deal of Twitter questions, as mentioned, but we simply can't do
we're
these
an
now.
Hour we're and a half and we have to... so many. We will do a season wrap-up show next week-ish sometime. Well,
for those following along, we still have 5 pages of the rundown.
Yes,
go.
We do. Yes, we
do. We're gonna do like Russ Ball and just push them down the road till the next podcast.
Yep. So, yep, that'll do it for us. Before we get out of here, as per usual, JR, anything good at the JS?
I mean, I did do that misery index of the if people are interested in reading about heartbreak, the Packers playoff losses, sort of ranking them. A lot of Aaron Rodgers stuff, I think, coming down the pike some point here. I've got you know, it remains to be seen, obviously, what happens with him. But in the event that he does decide to go elsewhere, we'll have lots of best of content for Mr. Rodgers and his tenure with the Green Bay Packers. I did a story that I was really happy with. I don't know if I mentioned it last week that it was going to happen. I don't think so. But I got to talk to the showrunner for the HBO show Station 11.
Oh,
it is a pandemic show.
I was just talking about
HBO
this
Max.
With my wife the other day, and now I'm interested in it. So cool.
Yeah, it is. You know, the barrier of entry for any pandemic show or dystopia show, I'm sure, is very high right now. They started filming right before the pandemic set in. They got 2 episodes in before they had to pause everything. But it is not your typical like dystopian pandemic. It's centered around just really cool characters. There's kind of a joyful heart to it. I mean, it's not all like flowers and rainbows or anything, but it definitely meditates on like, you know, I think survival is insufficient is sort of the tagline they were going with. Survival is insufficient. So like how art and how, you know, beauty and things, whatever. It's a really joyful show. I really, really loved it. I loved it, loved it, loved it. And then I got a chance to talk to the showrunner, a guy by the name of Patrick Somerville, who is a Green Bay native, whose grandfather, his architectural firm, built Lambeau Field. So handed down through his family, he has tickets on the 45-yard line. He was flying, as I was talking to him, from LAX to Appleton, Green Bay, I'm not even sure, to go to the game. He was there with you guys. Cool. And really enjoyed that. So if you want to go back, that's at jsonline.com. I got to marry 2 of my favorite things, which is sports, Wisconsin sports, and high-level peak TV, elite TV.
Very nice.
My favorite 2 things. It was a good time.
Matt, do you have anything worth promoting?
No, I don't make content. Just make sure that you go to Appleton Coffee Company and use code REE at checkout. Also, Packerland Breakfast Brand will continue to be on sale until the end of the Super Bowl.
Nice. You should also go
you
look
at... You post APC chats. That's content.
Okay,
that's
yes.
Slack so chats.
Follow me on Twitter. That's the only place where I produce good content.
Yeah, that's where he's got the Mo picture. And
Today in the APC Slack chat has become a pretty popular tweet series.
Also true. very true. All right. And I have my article going up at the Shepherd Express momentarily, breaking all this stuff down. And I am also in the process of going through the blocked punt in excruciating detail for Acme Packing Company. Again, if you like heartbreak and want to see a bad special teams play design, that'll be up shortly too. So that'll do it for us this week. We'll be back soon. We'll do a season wrap up. We'll get to you people in Twitter, at least if the Patreon people don't ask us 18 more questions. of course, you can get question priority by going over to Patreon and giving us a little sponsorship. Be on the Tailgate podcast a little more going forward as baseball season, well, doesn't start. There's progress today. Looks like baseball might be getting a little bit of momentum to get back in time. So that'll do it for us. We will talk to everybody next week. I'm not going to say enjoy the off season because that's stupid, but may you get a lot of chores done, I suppose.
So long, goodbye. Do I really have to finish? Do returns always diminish? Did I say that right? Does anybody want to joke when no one's laughing in the background? So this is how it ends. I promise to never go outside again. So long. Bye.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.